Welcome to the Stranger Still podcast. I'm Miles.
I'm Kathleen.
And we're rewatching every episode of Stranger Things ahead of the May and July two-part releases in season four. It's been 3 years. Let's catch up together.
All right. I feel like I start off everyone saying my name the exact same way. Well, I'm Kathleen.
We will edit them all together and find out if that is true. Today's episode is Chapter 6, The Monster. And like 11, in the woods with four boxes of Eggos, let's eat four entire boxes of Eggos and talk about this episode.
Gosh, that will make for a very painful day. Let me tell you that.
She absolutely is at least 2.5 boxes through
when we cut to her. I mean, true to like the style of kids, she could have just opened it, eaten a couple, and then opened another box.
Oh, that's a good
point. Kids and husbands such as Miles here are notorious for doing things like that.
That's a good point. I didn't think about that. But I also think she's just like, I like Eggos. I'm going to eat them until I barf.
That could be as well. We don't know.
All right. How do we start?
Didn't count the Eggos.
How do we start chapter six?
All right. So we start chapter six pretty much the same way we ended chapter five. We are in the woods. Jonathan is searching for Nancy. But the difference is when chapter five ended, it looked as though the portal, the gate, the window to the upside down was closing, but it's still open when we come back to chapter six here.
Now, did you think that was the same gate?
Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely the same gate.
Oh, I thought it was a different tree.
Oh, no. I think it was the same tree.
Oh,
the
really?
Same
she
door.
Runs in the upside down a little bit.
Well, she's searching. You know, she had already left. She'd left that tree, so she's searching back for it.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I thought it was like the trees are all kind of like fluctuating with the upside down. She finds another one that happens to have a little bit more of an opening.
I don't know.
Well, I mean,
I guess we'll never know for sure.
I know that one of the big things when I checked Reddit for this and looked at the comments from 2016, that was the biggest like hang up for everybody. Was like, wait, we saw the portal close. We saw it close.
But we didn't see it close. We saw it closing.
Oh, okay.
But we did not actually see it close all the way.
You tell me the internet was wrong?
I mean, the internet is almost always right. But in this one single instance, I think they might have been wrong.
We found the isolated case. All right.
So, yeah, you know, she's trapped. She's in the upside down world. She's running from the creature, trying not to get eaten, screaming out for Jonathan. Jonathan says, follow my voice. She finally finds the doorway back. Mm-hmm. Whether it be the same tree or a different tree, we don't know 100%. We're divided on that front. But you see her hand shoot through the door. Ugh. Jonathan grabs it and pulls her through to safety.
Good thing she's small.
Good thing she's small.
That was not a large opening.
That door was closing.
Yeah. Then they go to the room.
Yep. So, gosh, there's just so much to digest in this episode. Oh, I was exhausted just putting down all my notes for this. There's so much to cover. I feel like this episode is where we get all of the answers and all of the... obviously... all of them, but we get many of the questions that we have answered in this episode. So there's just so much ground to cover, so many things to cover. She gets out of the upside down and they go back to Nancy's house and they're just both super freaked. And it's decided that he's going to stay here. While I might add, Joyce has no concerns for her older son in this. You never at any point see her asking, where's Jonathan? He hasn't come home. All she cares about is Will. And I mean, that's kind of messed up. I feel really bad for Jonathan.
Hey, don't feel bad for Jonathan. He's in Nancy Wheeler's room.
Well, that's true.
He's laying out a blanket to sleep on the floor. And she's like, can you just come up to my bed? I have a boyfriend, but just, you know, we did just go through a near-death experience.
Yes. Yeah.
And she doesn't sleep.
She doesn't sleep because she's terrified.
Yeah.
Yep. And unfortunately, Steve chooses this moment to check to see if she's okay, sees them in the room together, and obviously some stuff goes down from there. But, oh, gosh. Yeah, so he spends the night. He wakes up in the morning. Nancy hasn't slept a bit, but she's been doing lots of research on...
research with like third grade picture books, she's discovered that bears do not hunt in packs and that sharks are attracted to blood. And it shows the books and it's like, they're like pictures.
Hey, you know, not everybody has like an entire encyclopedia on animals.
The boys are much more scientific than Nancy. Right,
exactly. But she finds out some really interesting information, you know, untested, but we're pretty certain that this checks out. We know by watching the episodes that the Demogorgon is attracted to blood, and she surmises that as well, that it's a predator. So they come up with this plan to attract it and kill or catch it.
Yeah, I think the plan is sound.
I like that too.
They're saying a theory, and they're like, we're going to test it. This is just such good. Horror movies just haven't had this, or like, just not that this is pure horror or anything like that. I also love how Jonathan's like, it can't get us in here, and Nancy's like, we don't know that.
Yeah,
which I was saying, I was like, how do you know?
In fact, you know, we had seen this before, but it's been so long that we just don't remember.
I know.
And he says that he can't get us in here, and I can hear you under your breath saying, "Well, you know that." And then right afterwards, Nancy says, "Well, we don't know that."
Yeah,
it's just, I like that. I like that they are actually logical and they don't make them out as just these super dumb characters. I really like that.
Yeah, everybody's got their own flaws, but at least things are working in some sort of within some sort of rules.
And then we move on to, of course, you know, the episode jumps in between because everybody stays on the same timeline. But if we're following the Nancy Jonathan, you know, they the next day they sneak out and they go to the ammo store and get all of those weapons. And the guy is just like, what the hell are they doing? They put it all up there. And he asks them, what are you guys doing with all this stuff? And Nancy says, monster hunting,
which is the exact right answer.
Is the truth, but it's also like, it is an answer that would be sufficient. So this guy would be like, oh, these young kids, of course, okay, they think they're gonna get some monsters, all right. Like, it's believable.
I love that. And they come out of the store and something is afoot. The town is a whisper. Can't wait to see your movie, Steve, Nancy.
Steve.
We see the movie theater
this
board.
This is where Steve joins his friends in douchedom.
Yeah, because it starts with legitimate worry.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, that interaction with Nancy wasn't right. Something was wrong with Nancy. She was worried. And so but because of his friends and just because of how he has been, you know, prior to this.
And he's super hurt. I mean, he's really hurt. This girl that he really likes, he is presumably cheating on him.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know that they've made it official, but yeah, that's how he feels.
Well,
and
he's seen her in the movies starring Nancy Wheeler, the slut.
So he vandalizes the movie theater. They walk around the corner and see them in the alley doing the same thing in the alley. And she, of course, is pissed because Steve doesn't know the whole story, but she does. And the fact that he would do this when she hasn't done anything wrong. She has not done a single thing wrong. I mean, the reason, yes, I would be uncomfortable if I saw, you know, somebody else with the person I was dating, but we know why she did it. It was out of complete fear. And so she's super angry. Jonathan's trying to hold her back, but then Steve starts to say horrible things about Will, and Jonathan snaps.
And punches him way too many times for the... I mean, maybe it's just looking back with rose-colored glasses because we love Steve so much.
Oh, yeah. Well, absolutely. He was letting out all of his fear and anger that he's been feeling the past 5 days. You know, since Will went missing, he's putting all of that into Steve's face.
Let me put it this way. On a rewatch, this doesn't age well because of the love for Steve. I'm like, stop punching Steve.
Yeah, because we know Steve becomes this beloved character, but he's not quite that yet.
I know,
he has a sensitive side. We know that in there he is a good guy. Mm-hmm. Nancy knows it too.
Yeah.
That's why she's trying to pull Jonathan back, even though he said these horrible things. Yeah. She knows it.
So Steve into the concussion protocol with Lucas from last episode, got slammed up against the car by 11. We go over to, it's just kind of three threads running through both of these last two episodes. It's kind of hard to digest at all. But Hopper and Joyce are on their own investigation. They're on a team now. Mm-hmm. Hopper believes her, and they're going to visit Terry Ives.
Yep. He tells Joyce everything he saw in there. You know, the kid's drawing. Mm-hmm. Joyce does not believe that it's her son's and pulls out a drawing of her son.
It wasn't Will. She comes back like, first of all, Joyce, why don't you have some little appreciation for what Hopper has done? Joyce is at a 10. Anxiety,
and all times. Like, all times.
We've just made huge breakthroughs in this case. Your son is presumably alive. That wasn't him. There's a big cover up. And she's like, how dare you? Stick figures. No, it wasn't him.
But you know, she's right. And she has been this whole time.
I know, but she's so pissed. Why is she so upset?
Well, we know she's so upset because she's lost her son.
She's out of 10.
Yeah, Miles is not pleased. But yeah, thus proves. And then that's when Hopper is like, well, oh, that mm-hmm. Terry Ives, she had a child that she was claiming that Dr. Brenner stole from her. Mm-hmm. The thing I like about this episode and as we progress is like the little hints back to previous episodes, the little details that you pick up on. Just tiny. I mean, Terry Ives is mentioned briefly. And then we go back to that and that becomes such a huge, huge part of the story.
She's one of the articles in the library that they're sifting through.
Mm-hmm, with the experiments. So I really like that.
And they go meet Terry Ives. They only talk to her sister because Terry Ives is catatonic, basically, in a chair. I loved the sister who literally says to Hopper and Joyce, you been reading Stephen King?
Yeah, I like that. Another hint to the 80s era.
Yeah, and she, whatever the sister's name is.
Oh, gosh, I didn't even write down her name. I have no idea.
She says, oh, yeah, and that's why the big bad man stole Jane away. Her baby is a weapon fighting commies. And, like, we as the audience are like, that's exactly what happened. So Jane is 11. We discovered that. Actually, there's mm-hmm. another moment where somebody says something exactly like the audience. Oh, it's when Hopper goes, maybe I've been chasing Will, but I thought I'd been looking for Will, but I've been chasing this other kid.
And we're the audience are like, we know.
Yeah.
We know.
That's what you're doing.
Yeah, I really like that. It's really interesting. You find out so much. I mean, we already know about the experiments basically by that tiny snippet of the article in the previous episodes. But this is where the sister illustrates exactly what happened. Mm-hmm. Terry was in college. She got involved in these experiments to get earn money where they gave her a bunch of drugs, mostly LSD, stripped her naked and put her in those tanks, the same ones that we see 11 in chapter 5.
11 is in the tanks a couple episodes, but 5 is the mm-hmm. one we first see her like go in.
Yep. Yeah. And then we find out that she's pregnant while she's doing all of these.
Yeah. Well, experiments. She's not a prisoner though. Terry Ives wasn't a prisoner. She was there as like a part of a terrible experiment, mm-hmm. Exploiting people. But 11 is an actual like prisoner.
Yep. Yeah. But then we find out that they stole her baby.
Yeah.
And covered it up as a miscarriage. Mm-hmm. And we also confirm at this time exactly how old they are because we're pretty sure they're in middle school, but we don't know how old. But she says about the room, she's kept it like this for the last 12 years. Mm. So we know that 11 is 12 years old.
Yeah. Pretty cool. That's a lot of good information we get.
And when she also mentions that her daughter has powers. Mm-hmm. So we know the mom knew the daughter had powers.
Yeah. And more to come from the mom. All right. Let's go over to the other, the third thread. We're going to
probably
all these
the
three,
most important thread.
Yeah,
really.
Yeah. The party, Dustin, Mike, Lucas, 11. They are fractured
after
the fight in season or in chapter 5.
You know, the best thing about all of this is Dustin. He is mm-hmm. practical, reasonable. He's like, hey, listen to yourselves. Do you guys not see what's happening?
Yeah.
You know, Mike's still upset, but he still wants to find 11. He still cares about 11, which I really like that. But Dustin's like, listen, you have to make amends with Lucas. And he later says when they're riding their bikes, how can you not see that Lucas is jealous? You're his best friend. And suddenly all of your attention's towards this girl.
Yeah, Dustin has no, he's the MVP absolutely of the season. He's like, there's no compromise. We have to get back together. We stick together as a group. That's how it works. You either, or you're not a part of the group.
Yeah.
You do it, you obey, or you be banished, mm-hmm. or what he says. And he also, I like Mike later realizing that Eleven was trying to protect them. That felt really real to me as well. It's just another example of why the show is great. We don't have to have Mike have some episode, you know, or two episode arc where he discovers that Eleven was protecting them. It's real. In the moment when, mm-hmm. when Eleven threw his friend, he was upset, but later he comes back. He's removed from the heat of the moment. And with everything he knows about Eleven and the trust and the bond that they've built, he's like, oh shoot. She was trying to protect us.
Mm-hmm.
I really like that.
They
do. So Dustin does try to get them back together, but it doesn't. They don't get the shake.
Like when he says, all three of you are being a bunch of little assholes when I'm the only reasonable one.
Remember when we split up, we have to stay together.
Right?
Yeah.
He always knows. He really is. He's the glue to their entire friendship. I mean, he is what keeps them together.
And he's us. He's the audience shouting at the TV, don't split up. Split up.
He is the voice of the audience. Oh, I like that. I didn't really think about it that way, but I like that.
He's saying everything we're thinking, which is awesome. But they don't get together.
No.
Lucas refuses the shake because on the condition of his shaking Mike's hand, he says we have to get rid of Eleven from the group.
And Mike will not agree to that. And thus they go their separate ways.
Yeah.
Lucas says, fine, you know, I'll find the gate on my own. You guys can go chase Eleven.
Yeah. And not only do we, the audience, know this is the wrong thing to do, they know it's the wrong thing to do. All of them in their faces and Dustin out loud.
Yes. You know, Dustin, most of all.
Just one. This is a pro Dustin podcast, as we know. But there's one more moment where he goes like, she threw me against the car, and Mike says it was an accident, and Lucas goes, accident? And Dustin goes, accident or not, can we all agree that it was awesome?
Yeah.
And Lucas goes, awesome. He goes, I'm sorry, she threw you with her mind.
I just love Dustin, that. Oh my god!
Most people can't do things with their mind. Dustin is not losing sight of that.
So at this point in the arc, you see them go their separate ways as Lucas is leaving his house alone. You know, he's packed all of his, you know,
Vietnam
stuff from his dad. And he waves to the electrician guy, which we know is one of the guys, one of the scientists from the lab. And then, we go back to Mike and Dustin and they start getting chased by the bullies. God, those guys are assholes.
Man, I mean, they're just, man, they got punchable faces, that's for sure.
Yes, they do. I don't even remember their names, but the
Troy and somebody else.
Well done, the
main bully, the one who peed himself, is Troy.
Okay, well, Troy, he's a royal.
Yeah, he's got a knife out from go.
We don't like Troy. He's mean.
Yeah, he's got the knife.
He's got some family problems going on at home for sure.
Yeah, and he's going to chase them to the quarry.
Yeah, so they chase him to the quarry. He threatens to cut Dustin up unless Mike jumps off the cliff. Another reference to episode 1 or 2, I think, when Hopper is talking with that dumb police officer. Oh, yeah, that guy bet $10 to jump off this cliff. And Hopper's like, no, you would die.
Yeah.
You would die if you jumped off of this. By the time you hit that water, it's like cement. You'd break every bone in your body.
They do a good job showing us how high that is.
Yeah.
Because that's also where Will's quote unquote body is found. So we see the scale of it multiple times, you know, preparing us probably for this moment. I got a note for Mike. So Troy's got Dustin, he's got the knife, and he says, jump off or I'm going to cut him up. If I was Mike, I'd say, like, just cut him up a little bit to show me that you're even capable of this.
Of course, you would.
Because we're talking about knifing people's teeth out.
No loyalty right there.
No, I just want to. Can you even do this, Troy? You know, that's what I want, Mike. Like, take out a tooth real quick, and let's see what kind of stomach you have before I jump off the quarry.
But you know what? That just shows how strong Mike's empathy is.
Mike is a madman.
He truly cares about his friends, which is, you know, you see that with his relationship with Eleven. He truly cares about the people in his life, and I really like that.
And he was going to die.
He's willing, but he doesn't know. He doesn't realize that he's going to die, but he is willing to jump off of that and possibly hurt himself. He's at least has an understanding that he will get seriously hurt if he jumps off of this.
And this is when we're getting that song that I talked about in episode 4 or chapter 4, The Body. I talked about that song at the end of the episode when Will and Joyce are making a connection, the ham radio is catching on fire. We got the modulation, and when Mike steps to the thing and looks down in the quarry, and we're hearing the ooh. And then I said at that moment, hey, it's that same song. And remember how I didn't know the title? I knew the title. And I was like, why is it called She'll Kill You? That's a weird title. And then all this goes down and Dustin's shouting, She'll Kill You.
Yeah, because what happens? Mike actually jumps.
Yep.
But Eleven is there and she saves him and she lifts him back up. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, we see Eleven break the bully's arm, break Troy's arm. Yeah. Oh, yeah, that one hurt to watch. Mm-hmm. But, yep, and then they run away. She tells them to run.
Yeah.
And Dustin starts screaming, She'll kill you. There it is. That's the song title. Now we understand.
And that song itself is a big part of season one. And we got we got that drum going.
Yeah.
You know, it's pretty, pretty cool.
And throughout this entire episode, we see, you know, three flashbacks to the lab. The first one is Dr. Brenner talking to Eleven, you know, today we make history. Today we make contact. And then later we see another flashback when he's telling her, it can't hurt you, not from here. It's reaching out to you, but it wants you. It's calling you. So don't turn away from it this time. Yeah. And then after she saves Mike and she's laying on the ground and she's crying, it goes to the final flashback of her in the lab. And we see how the rip happens. Mm-hmm. She goes in there. She makes contact. She touches the Demogorgon. Realizes that it's this evil being and she screams and all of her powers go flying out and you see the walls crumbling and you see the beginning of the rip. You
she
see
creates
the gate.
And she tells Mike, I'm the monster. Yeah. And then Mike says, that means I'm friends with the monster inside of my... All right.
Okay. not quite that far.
Not that one. But Dr. Brenner is such a jerk in this.
He's a dick.
I mean, besides imprisoning... imprisoning children. He doesn't know the answers.
It's imprisoning
He's
children.
He's saying, like, don't worry, it won't hurt you. He has no way
he
of
has
knowing
no
that.
No idea. No idea whatsoever.
Yeah.
He's all he cares is about the science and the weaponization.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
God, he's such
but
a douche.
At least they reconcile with Eleven. Mm-hmm. And we're obviously on the way to reconciling
that.
the whole party.
Yep. And again, you know, throughout this entire episode, you see little snippets of everybody from the lab trying to find Eleven. And the episode ends with Eleven and the party going back to Mike's house. And then you see the fleet of those electrical undercover vans coming down the road. And you hear the scientist announcing over the intercom, we found her. And then end credits.
Wow. Get setting up for a great ending. These three threads need to come together. They're all on the trail at various points. They have all the information, but separately.
Yeah.
And the great thing about this show is that they don't jerk us around and milk that out for four seasons.
Thank goodness.
Characters just say to other characters,
say what you're doing.
The compasses aren't working. Hey, I saw that your son was not actually dead.
It's about sharing information, people.
All right.
Come on.
Every episode we end, or every chapter, I don't know. I mean, those are interchangeable words
episodes, chapters, whatever.
Going to end with a Kathleen Feeler moment and a Miles Music moment. Kathleen, give us your feeler moment of chapter 6.
So now my feeler moment, you kind of touched on this a little bit already, but it is when after Eleven has saved Mike's life and she admits to him, it was me, I opened the gate. He is no hesitation, instantly believes in Eleven, has all the trust in her, tells tells her that he doesn't blame her, that basically that it's not her fault. She saved his life. Yeah. You saved my life. That was such a feeler moment.
That is just so, their relationship or their connection is so good.
Yeah.
And it's so real. Cause like, you can't say it's unwavering support mm-hmm. from Mike. We've had six episodes and he's had two moments where he snapped mm-hmm. against her, you know, yeah. two different times mm-hmm. in six episodes, but yet he yep. is just so willing to come back there and just.
Yeah. And it's that moment that you see she's possibly made the first real human bond, human relationship that she's ever had. I mean, you see them, her and Mike and Dustin embrace. I mean, that's probably the first like real piece of love that she's experienced.
Yeah. And he is not like Dr. Brenner at all.
No.
The music moment of the episode is when Nancy is in the Upside Down, but especially when she's describing the Upside Down to Jonathan, we hear some of the first full phrases of the melody that that we get for the theme of the Upside Down. And it's a little weird. It's a, you know, they're obviously everything is on the synthesizers, which theoretically don't have a wrong note on them, but they do dial these things into what I guess you call microtones. Mm-hmm. So, you know, a semitone is the bum 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 bum, you know, do re, so yeah. like, you know, from C to C sharp up to mm-hmm. B and back over again. But the microtones are just like, you could call it flat or you could call it sharp, you know, and it's, they make this melody for the Upside Down out of things that aren't notes. You could not play them on guitar. You couldn't, there's none in Beethoven. No, these notes never show up in Mozart or anything. So they're using this, and that's what makes it feel so uneasy and so different. You know, it's like, wong, wong, yeah. wong,
that's
wong.
That's what gives
you know.
It that creepy vibe.
Yeah, and it's, you could do it on a sitar. I mean, it's kind of like playing a sitar melody, but on synthesizers. So it's really cool. And the visuals of the Upside Down are certainly what resonates with a lot of people. But the music, and that's what they're doing. They're using microtones to make a melody that is sort of uneasy and sort of out of this world, because it's not not something we're used to hearing.
Yeah, makes these scenes certainly more impactful.
Yeah, though worth noting, in Turkish music and Indian music, they often do use microtones, so they don't always have to be creepy, in this case they're used in a very creepy way.
All right. Okay, so I've got a final question for you, Miles. So we've now rewatched the first six episodes, which we have not seen since it first came out in 2016. So what are some things that you maybe caught onto this time around that you didn't catch last time, or some things that maybe you forgot that you're like, oh yeah, okay.
Oh, what's yours?
I don't know if I have one. Oh. There's so much I forgot. Honestly, rewatching this, I knew the baseline story. We know like the big events that are going to happen, but it is almost like watching it for the first time. Mm-hmm. It's like reading, you know, what are those notes that you would do to get around reading the book for school?
Crib notes.
Crib notes?
Yeah.
It's like reading the crib notes for a story and then going back and actually reading the story. That's what it's like for me.
So I don't have anything that like I specifically thought like, oh, I missed that the first time around. But in this rewatch, the biggest difference for me over the course of the six episodes is how efficiently they introduced us to all of these characters, because it's pretty much the plot from at least chapter two onwards. We're mm-hmm. done with like,
we're not messing around.
Yeah. We're not creating,
we're building on those plots.
Yeah. We're not creating scenes to build a relationship between the audience and the character. Yeah. They're just so efficient at introducing us to really full characters of Mike and Eleven and Dustin, and Dustin and Lucas have a little bit of work to do, but Hopper and Joyce and later Steve, that is what's most amazing to me. There's so many things that have happened in these first six episodes that I'm like, wait, that happened in the first six episodes?
You know, actually I did remember something that I had a moment when you see that woman who was the person who killed poor Benny in his diner when she walks in to see Mr. Clark.
Oh, yeah.
And I think, oh, my gosh, Mr. Clark dies? But he doesn't. But I, like, I had a moment where, like, I couldn't remember what happens to Mr. Clark. Like, does she shoot him in that moment? I can't remember.
That's awesome. And I've mentioned this a number of times, but the biggest rewatch difference for me is knowing that I'm going to love Steve.
Yeah.
And it's actually kind of a detriment to some of the plot lines they're wanting us to buy on, but it's also good because it is real. His heart and soul and what he becomes is there. It's like, there from the beginning. Yeah,
it's like more painful to watch him in these moments where he's a total jerk.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, but even like you mentioned it, when she comes around and confronts him in the alleyway and he's got the spray paint can and he looks at her, it's not like anger and like it's not Anakin Skywalker staring at Padme. It, you know, Darth Vader staring at Padme. He's, you know, but it's of hurt. I mean, he is genuinely hurt, mm-hmm. and that's the face. So the writers and the actors, you know, they do a good job of a realistic redemption, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Rewatching it, I believe that this is the character that we come to love. He's just, you know, in another phase of his life.
Yeah. So if you are watching Stranger Things for the first time, which I hope you aren't, because we've been given lots of spoilers
also,
throughout.
I mean, it's called rewatch. It's called Stranger Still Rewatch. It's your fault.
Yeah. Well, just prepare to start loving Steve.
Yeah. We try to like stay away from like the true spoilers. You know, we're not going to be like, oh, and remember this. It ends this way.
Remember when Eleven dies?
Babe, how could you do that? Yeah. Remember how it turns out Darth Vader is actually Luke's father? All right. Well, that is a good place to end as any. All right. Episode 6 is done. We'll be back for the episode 7 and wonderful finale of season 1.
Make sure to like us, follow us on Twitter.
Oh, yeah,
which
Twitter,
is
at StrangerStill22 on Twitter. I forgot that in a couple episodes, but we'll put it in there.
I forgot the name, so there you go.
We're quite a pair. No,
we're quite a team.
It's going to be good. And the season 1 finale, that episode will make that a little bit longer to talk about the season as a whole.
A lot to digest, though.
Oh, boy. All right. I'm Miles.
I'm Kathleen.
Good night.